Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I am your host today, your humble host, Michelle Berquist, and I am delighted to introduce our leading lady today. I'm going to tell you a little bit about her because our topic today is woman in construction, disrupting a male-dominated industry. Because I don't know about all of you, but if you don't know, there are not as many women in the construction industry as there should be. And our leading lady today is Alana Pazula Fulton. She's the CEO of Liquid Amber Designs. And Alana, what you need to know about her is that she is involved in a family business that's a third generation woodworking, construction, countertops, furniture business. And I want Alana, if you will say hello and say hello to all of our listeners today. Welcome.
Well, hello there. How is everybody today?
Yeah, exactly. How are you? It's Friday. It's like we're all kind of like in an excited mood because I don't care about whoever works for themselves or owns their own business. Or Fridays are always awesome days because you're thinking about the weekend. But we're here today to talk about you and kind of your background in being such a female leader in a male-dominated industry. And if you can you just share with me and our listeners, it's like what, you know, your grandfather started the business, correct? And I know there's a story because how did you get involved in the family business? Kind of tell that story for us.
Well, I was kind of sucked in at day one, really. My grandfather started a company back in 1952. And my dad joined and started working with him in the late 60s. And then in 1971, my dad took over. And I went on job sites with him. And, you know, I loved it. I loved the whole construction thing. I liked the smell of the wood and the sounds of the saws and the routers and all that good stuff. And I loved it. I loved being around construction, loved playing in the shop and in the office and stuff. And but I did. I just kind of grew up in it, and then I started working there when I was 18, part time.
I got to say one thing. I'm going to interrupt because I'm laughing because most kids will go, a candy store is what we love the smell of, and you're saying you love the smell of wood. I just wanted to make sure I got that. Is that right? Because that's hysterical.
Yeah.
That you just love that whole environment. That's funny. Keep going. Sorry to interrupt, but that was hysterical.
No, it's fine. Yeah, I still walk through my shop now, and I can smell those smells, and it brings me back to my dad's shop when I was working with him.
Yeah, and I'm curious, it's like when you say you were kind of sucked in, you know, did your dad say, hey, come to the job site, or did you say, hey, take me, because you wanted to be there? I mean, was this just something that you really were excited about as a kid, or how did you actually get, you know, introduced to the woodworking?
I kind of went with him one day, and I, you know, kind of, he was doing some work on a new construction project, and I'll never forget it because he handed me a red grease pen and had me write the unit numbers on the back of the cabinets just so that he knew where the countertops went. And it didn't occur to me until years later that I was writing the unit number on an already installed cabinet. So it was just something to make me feel important.
Right. Oh, but how cute is that? Because, I mean, who knows? You know so many secrets and tricks to that. But, you know, as you know, it's like we're Women Lead Radio, and you're part of Connected Women of Influence. And one of the things we always want to do is kind of shine a light through your experiences on what it's like to be a female leader. And, you know, how for you, how male-dominated is construction and woodworking? You know, and what are some of the things maybe that you can share with our listeners about what you have struggled with as you've grown into the family business and now taken it over And I know we've had some conversations where you've been challenged as a female leader just based on kind of industry norms. Can you share maybe just let's go with one story because I ask big questions, but one story where you were challenged and how did you overcome it?
Well, I think the biggest thing that still gets me, and in all fairness to any contractor or salesman that comes into my office, we're a small company. We're not this huge corporation. Mm-hmm. We're a small company, and I at the front desk, so as soon as you walk in, you see me. And in all fairness to them, not many CEOs and owners are working at the front desk. So they'll come in and ask for, you know, the owner. I tell them I'm the owner, and they kind of look at me like, no, really, who's the owner? But when I start, you know, talking to them about what they're needing and dimensions and, you know, technical things, they look at me and they go, wow, you actually know what you're talking about. Shocker.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the biggest thing is still dealing with that whole stereotype. And now I've got contractors that were like that from day one. And, you know, they walk in and they don't, if I'm not there that day, I'll come back tomorrow.
So oh, wow.
It's turned quite
How
a
nice
bit.
Is that? But so what do you feel with some of these contractors? You know, because again, it's a woman in a male-dominated industry. Is it the knowledge that you have that you feel you've started to be accepted as an equal, as a leader, or was it just how you handled it? I'm really curious, you know, your perspective on how you've started to get results. And then now, obviously, you're gaining a good reputation where they want to interact with you, right? They know you're the big dog.
Yeah, I think a big part of it, too, is not to be so defensive. So if a gentleman comes in and he wants to, you know, get some information and thinks he's going to speak to a guy about it, and then when I start speaking intelligently about whatever it is that he wants, and I'm not using, you know, ridiculous terms. I'm using actual terms and dimensions. Okay, well, if you're doing this, you have to figure out for this and, you know, give reference to this. And then when you start referring to things like that in particular, they start realizing, wow, she does know what she's talking about. She's not just here to pick out a color countertop for me, you know, and they just start respecting the fact that you actually do know what you're talking about. And it's hard to get there. But once you get there, I've had a lot of return clients because that, you know, customer service and we know what we're talking about. So it helps out a great deal.
I really I love what you're saying. It's like, you know, focus on the client, take care of them, you know, be able to answer those technical, knowledgeable questions. You know, for you in kind of growing up in the business, and obviously it's like you are very hands-on in what you learn, have you taken or been involved in any professional development, communication skill things, or, you know, seminars, workshops, programs that really helped you as a leader, or would you recommend any to women that you know of or experienced? Have you had any?
You know what? I haven't.
Just hands-on day-to-day. That's where you've kind of gotten your school of hard knocks, we call that. I think that's a good
thing. Pretty much. There was a situation once where I was trying to explain to a client over the phone when I was still working with my dad how this one laminate countertop bends and why we can do it this way and we can't do it that way. And he noticed I was struggling with it, so he took me back down to the shop, and he says, I'm going to build one of these tops right now so you can see how it works. So I was watching him, and he's showing me, okay, we have to put it in the machine this way. We do it this way, so we can't do it that way. And now if I'm trying to describe that, I picture being in the shop next to my dad and watching this countertop being built. So a lot of it is just hands-on and paying attention and, you know, listening and watching everybody's else's mistake so that I don't make that same mistake. And just pay attention. Pay attention is a big thing.
So it totally is. And, you know, I mean, I want to look at some scenarios because, you know, I'll hear from women who are working in male-dominated industries. And, you know, I'd love your perspective on this to share with our listeners. And, you know, sometimes when you're in a male-dominated industry, you know, and I get it. I mean, there's, you know, we have that term called locker talk, and I'm not going to go down the political road at all, but I do kind of go, you know, if you're a woman and you're interacting with a lot of men, you know, like, what would be your advice? Or it's like, how do you handle when it's like, you know, guys being guys that kind of talk, locker room talk? Do you shut it down? Do you just kind of like start to be, you know, void of hearing it? You know, because guys do when they're around a group of other guys. Or how do you handle it as an owner? You know, when people start having those those kind of guy conversations. And I know you know what I'm talking about, and I'm not going to explain it, but we've all been in those scenarios, swearing, inappropriate language. What would you suggest women do? Like, if the, you know, we get so freaked out over that. And I know I have my way, which is like, I just, you know, I get in there on my own. But what would you suggest people do if they're in that situation as a woman?
Well, it gets tricky, because if you make a big deal, then you've got these guys going, oh, she's just a girl. She's, you know, not one of us, just a wuss, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of, you almost kind of have to laugh it off. And a lot of times if, you know, that happens to me, I just kind of put my hands in the air and smile and go, okay, time for me to leave. I'm out, you know, and I kind of make a joke about it, but they know it's making me uncomfortable. So I'm leaving.
Exactly.
So if you just kind of like laugh it off and walk away, sometimes they'll get the point, or they'll take their conversation outside, or, hey, you know, great talking to you. We've finished what we need. We'll talk to you later, or whatever. So I make it known that I'm not, you know, real keen on what they're chatting about and get my out on it. So I make a joke about it, make it lighthearted, because I don't want them to think, oh, that's just a girl and, you know, not one of us type of thing. Because unfortunately, you kind of have to be one of the guys in construction, but you don't actually have to be one of the guys, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. I want to go deeper on that, because I mean, again, and I'm going to share, mine's totally different, but when I was in banking, you know, and I'm from the Midwest, and I remember there were times when some of the lenders and the officers of the bank would take clients out, right? And you know, this is probably too much information about Nebraska, but at the time when our lenders would go out, they would go to some of these, let's just say, not so great bars where women would want to be in there, right? There were things going on that I didn't want to be there. And that was what you did. You took clients out. And I'm dating myself terribly, but there were times when it was my client and some of the guys would like take my client to that, and I was not allowed to go, and it really ticked me off. And then I went, well, question one, do I want to go? No. Do I need to go? Possibly. And the third one is, you know, because this kind of leads to with you, like, what are some strategies that you would have that you could share with our listeners of how you can like be a guy, but you're not a guy? Do you know what I mean? Like, do you engage in the conversation with them? Do you, you know, I mean, I know there's a tipping point of where it's not appropriate anymore, but what are some things, you know, that you've learned to do that you interact with guys all day long? How do you be one of the guys when you know you're not a guy? That's, I think, what's so hard for women, and especially in construction.
Yeah. Honestly, I've never had a situation where it came to that. A lot of my stuff is done in the office. I'm not usually out on job sites. I, you know, take the dimensions, do the bids, all that kind of stuff. But physically out in the field, I'm not usually out there. And I'm kind of thinking that there's contractors that once they walk into your office, they're a different persona, rather than being out in the dirt and the construction and all that kind of stuff. It's like they're a different type of person. Some aren't. Mm-hmm. Some are just, they are who they are. And, you know, they're the same, whether they're in the office or they're out in the field. But most of the guys that come in, like I said, the biggest thing is they just, you know, well, where's the real owner? Not so much doing that whole guy thing. I've never really had to deal with that, thankfully.
Do you feel sometimes the men are serious, or they're just kind of like having fun? They're like, they're trying to kind of goad you, you know, where they're kind of like, who's the real owner? Or do you feel they're serious about challenging you as a woman leader?
I've had both. I've had some that I actually had a delivery driver that was dropping off some material to me asking where the owner was. And I, you know, kind of raised my hand and I said, right here. And he goes, oh, is he in the back? I said, no, I'm the owner. Oh, you own this place. Yeah. Oh, well, I didn't know that. And it was weird because the next few times that driver came in, he was kind of different to me. He was very serious and didn't joke with me as much and didn't chit chat as much. And I finally said something to him and I said, you know, I'm the same person I was before you found out I own the place. You know, I'm not a big deal. I'm the same person.
Same girl. Yeah, really.
But it's just some are no big deal about it, and some completely change. It's just, it's bizarre.
I know we've had, again, you and I've had lots of conversations on this, but do you feel there's anything that you do to kind of change your communication style a little bit when you work or interact with men, or is it you pretty much straight same across the board, both men and women, because I know I've learned, you know, and again, this is just kind of like, I do think strategy, but depending on who I'm with, I always try to kind of navigate my communication style to the individual I'm talking to. Do you kind of find yourself doing that, where you interact a little differently with men versus women and the communication style, or is it the same across the board?
It's usually pretty much the same. Once I develop a relationship with the client, you bring in, you know, the joking and the chit-chatting and stuff like that. But one of the big things that we pride ourselves on is our customer service. And, I mean, that's important. I mean, your name is on this product and all that kind of stuff. And when you're working with a customer, male or female, you want to make sure that, you know, that nobody's getting special treatment. You're just a customer. Is somebody that's has come into your shop and your office and, you know, wants to be treated respectfully. And, you know, once you get to know them, then you can goof with them. But, you know, to begin with, it's pretty much the same across the board. You know, just have to provide the best customer service and, you know, that kind of thing. I've got contractors that we just goof all the time. You know, they'll come in and, okay, what do you want now?
I love that. I love that word, goof with them, or that phrase.
Oh,
you,
yeah.
You goof with them all the time.
Yeah. And then you have these other contractors that you know that they're not that type of contractor. How can I help you today? What can I do for you today? You know, do you need color selections? Do you need dimensions? Do you need, you know, what do you need today? So there's, you know, you kind of have to gauge your clients to figure out which way you interact with them.
Well, and that's where I want to shift gears a little bit. I mean, I know our time is kind of limited on the show, but, you know, as a business owner, right, CEO of a woodworking and cabinetry and furniture business, you know, we're not going to talk about, you know, post-2008. We know what a crisis that was and how we all of us as business owners and business people got affected, right, either directly or we know people that just took a hit. You know, now we're in 2017. So for Liquid Amber Designs, like, how do you stay on top of the trends? Like, what are some of the really cool trends going on right now with cabinetry, and how do you kind of stay on top of that? Is it education, trade associations? What do you do to kind of stay on top of the new, shiny, cool things going on within your industry, or do you?
Well, yeah, I have a designer, actually, that is in-house, and she's amazing. She's very, very talented, and we talk a lot about, oh, this is coming up today. And, you know, I've known her for, she's like 12 years or something like that. And no longer than that. But, you know, she'll kind of tell me, hey, this is what's coming up, or we'll chat about this or chat about that. And I have emails that I'm attached to that, you know, this is a new thing or new item, or this is where things are going. And then I'm also, we're also a member of the Apartment Association of Orange County. So we go to their trade show. We have a couple trade shows we go to, and we just kind of, you know, feel out and see what's out there and change our showroom style a little bit to conform to what's coming up next. And it's just kind of keeping an eye on things and checking out different sites and just paying attention, really, is what it is.
And, you know, when you look at how you guys do what you do, because, I mean, woodworking is very, you know, hand laborious labor, right? I know there's some automation type things. Are there a lot of trending automation things coming down the pike? I mean, is it still kind of a very male or manual focused business? Or what are some exciting, you know, new kind of things that are happening? Or is it? I mean, when you think of how you make, you know, cabinetry and how you do that and install, are there new kind of cool things that are happening that kind of you get excited about?
Oh, there's all sorts of machinery I'm excited about, but all this machinery is like six digits, you know, it's, and you know, there's something to be said too for hands-on. A lot of our work is very custom. You know, we do our laminate countertops in-house, and you know, we can make the deck as deep as they need, or the splash height or no splash, or you know, that funny corner or whatever. Same thing with our cabinets. We have a CNC machine, an automated CNC machine, that we can cut cabinet boxes to whatever funky corner or end that a client has. And we do, I'd say 95% of the assembly we do on, you know, by hand. We have machines that help, you know, clamp the corners and stuff like that. But for the most part, a lot of it's very much hands-on. And, but yeah, there's a lot of equipment out there that would be way cool to have. But Not everybody can do that.
Yeah, but your voice lit up when you started talking about all the exciting equipment you could have that are six figures. And you went, oh, the reality is they cost a lot, and you got to pick and choose. I get it. There's always new things coming down the pike. You know, and one of the things I want to kind of talk to you about is, in addition to all that we're conversing on, and that is, you know, the statistics are so not great, you know, for second and third generation businesses. And here you're running a third generation business. So I'm curious if you can share, you know, because we've got listeners who are women owners and presidents and CEOs and founders. I mean, what do you feel are the top three things that kind of have been key to your success in taking on this third generation enterprise and still making it relevant? I mean, I know there's bugs, there's all challenges. We could have, you know, hours of talk on that. But what do you think are the three core things that you've done to really continue to be successful as a third generation business?
Well, I kind of lucked out having worked with my dad for so long and making a lot of contacts with his clients. And when he was closing his shop, there were a lot of clients that, you know, I asked them, you know, is there anything else you need before we shut down? And, you know, some of them wanted to know where I was going and what I was up to. And I explained to them that I was opening up my own place, and a lot of them followed me. And the nice thing is a lot of them followed me that we only did countertops for, and now we're doing their cabinets for, you know, apartments and things like that. So it was a huge help to me. I very much lucked out that I had a lot of clients follow me from my dad's business. And, you know, like I said before, customer service is huge. I mean, you return those calls, you return those emails, you stay on top of jaws. If customer's not happy, you fix it. If the customer has a concern, you deal with it. It's just customer relations and keeping on top of things and being able to follow through. So I don't know if there's three, but the one big one for me was, you know, building the relationships that I did with my dad's company. And now I'm dealing with them now too. I've got apartments that just call me up and say they need, you know, unit such and such done, and we already have the information. We just go in, measure it, build it, be done with it.
Nice.
But yeah, customer service is huge in this industry. It's huge in every industry. You go to a restaurant, you go to a clothing store, and if the waitress or the anybody behind the counter is nasty or rude to you, you don't really want to go back.
Well, you know, and that's something interesting, because I've heard, you know, schools of thought, and I know you're out there, you're bidding on contracts. It's like you're bidding on jobs and things. You know, there are a school of thought that people will say, it's all about the bottom line. It's all about, you know, the lowest bid. And then others who, like I'm hearing you say, and I believe it too, that there is a large school of thought that relationships are key, you know, to not only getting but keeping customers and getting them to do business with you again. What's your opinion? Because, I mean, in construction, that is something people say. It really, it's not about the relationships. It's the lowest bid. Do you find that, you know, or maybe not as much? Or what's your take on that analogy?
I've had customers who have come in strictly looking for numbers. No matter how well you treat them, they just want the bottom line. I've actually had another couple clients who came in and said, well, your price is a little bit higher, but, you know, you and your designer have taken so much time with us to help us out and get this squared away. So I've seen both sides of it. I've had clients come with us knowing that ultimately you get what you pay for. I'm not saying that we're obviously expensive by any stretch, but we're very competitive in the industry. But customer service is a big part of it. You know, if you help them out and, you know, if a customer comes in and says, I just want to look at colors, first thing I tell them, when you come in, bring carpet, bring tile, bring paint, bring flooring, bring wallpaper, bring whatever you need. I've got a table here. We'll just start going through colors, putting things out. And they're going to be living with this countertop, these cabinets, whatever, for a while. This is not a small purchase.
Right.
So they don't want to walk into their house, you know, 2 months later and think, oh, why did I do that color? Why did I pick that? You know, they're going to be living with it for a while.
Yeah, but you're thinking big picture. I think that's awesome that you know, that's from your years of experience, which obviously is worth something. And I like where you said, you know, sometimes, well, many times being the low price leader is not, you know, what we aspire to. It's like, I think relationships are central to business, but there are times when that's all people are looking for, right? Sometimes, you know, we want to have the lowest price and pay for it. You know, what is kind of your big vision, you know, for Liquid Amber Designs? I mean, are you looking, I don't know if you can publicly say this, but I'm going there and you can tell me if I have to ask another question. Like, are you looking to build it and sell it? Are you looking to leave the business as a legacy, you know, to the next generation? Because I know you have a daughter and, you know, what's kind of like your big vision for where Liquid Amber Designs is going?
I would love to make it a huge company. I would love it. As far as selling it, it would be very emotional for me because, you know, my grandpa started doing this and it's kind of like a family thing. And if my daughter chose not to do it, it would probably break my heart. But in the same time, she's got her own dreams and her own desires. This is something I wanted to do. I didn't start working there because, oh, well, dad owns a company and mom owns a company. I'm just going to work there. I enjoyed it. And even now when my dad retired, he'll come to my shop and, why are you still doing this? I said, because I still love it. You know, I love everything about it. I mean, yeah, you have your challenges and your nightmares and all that that come up. But ultimately, I love the industry and I love what I do. So as far as selling it, I think it would kill me. But, you know, once you get there, you kind of make that decision once you get there, you know.
Now, does your daughter work in the business? Do you like, is she like you? Is she interested in it? Does she show an interest in the woodworking biz, so to speak, the family business, or not at all?
Well, she's 13, so her big focus is definitely not getting a job or working.
Well, I just meant that she'd like to come and enjoy, because I know, I'm sure it's makeup, it's texting, it's like, you know, all the things that kids do right now and the online stuff.
It's not so much that. She's an obsessive Pinterester right now, which I think is great because I'm getting some really cool gifts for Christmas and stuff. But no, she'll come in during breaks and stuff like that and ask if I need any filing done. And, you know, I'll pay her a few bucks to do it, you know, if she wants to do it, just so that, you know, she understands you do something, you do it right, you do it well, you'll get paid for it.
Yeah, it's good value and good learning. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's so cool that you have another, you have a daughter, and it's like, you know, maybe she'll be the next leader within the company or not. But it sounds like you, I don't know, have you guys ever talked about a succession plan? Or, I mean, are you thinking kind of with your, you know, kind of, are you just too much kind of building the business to kind of think about what would the succession plan be? Have you given any thought to that?
Not quite yet. I think maybe when she gets older, you know, we'll go in that direction. But we're just excited. We're on our seventh year. You know, they say that 30% of new businesses fail in the first two and then 50 in the first five. And here we are going into our seventh year and things are going great.
Yeah, and kind of share more details because you actually, the third generation part of it is you took on your dad's clients, right? That's kind of how you kind of started into, so there was a transition there. I think it's amazing because the stats are so bad for the second generation, right, of businesses, and now yours is the third. And, you know, I know you said your dad and your grandfather, they had a great reputation in the Southern California area, which is amazing. And I'm going to leave you with one final question. Are you ready for it? So you're going to blow our minds, right? No pressure. Ready?
Go for it.
I want to – so this is you. This is not, you know, your company and any of that. But what do you think are the two – this is what I want you to leave us on a high note for our listeners. Like, you as a woman in a male-dominated industry, what do you feel are the two most important things that you've done that have just been central to your success as a woman owner, female leader – in running a business?
Not to let people get to you.
You know, and they do. Yes.
Oh my gosh, they do. When, you know, you come against people who, you know, make you feel less of a person or less important or incompetent, you know, you prove them wrong, put your head up, prove them wrong. That's the best thing you can do. And just, you know, just keep, I don't know, barreling forward and And I'm trying to explain it, and I'm totally flubbing it.
No, it's good. It's really good. I like the idea because people get to you, you know? I mean, I think that's fabulous advice. What would be another thing that you feel has just been key to your, you know, mindset or, you know, I call it head trash. It's like, you know, what's your mantra that you get out there and say, this is, I call it warrior mode, right? I'm in warrior mode. I'm like, I'm ready to make it happen. Never let them see me sweat. Never let them, you know, it's like, just keep buggering on. But what is your other key to success, and that's how we'll
one of
the
things that I have one of the things that I have personally still a challenge with, but I still try to keep it moving, is not to get really defensive. Not everybody's out to get me. Not everybody's trying to make sure that I fail, or, you know, somebody that did tell you something years ago, and every time when something happens, you hear that voice in your head of that person saying, you know, it's all your fault, you know, this is happening because of you, or you don't know what you're doing. You know that's not true. You have to not be overly defensive and just get what you need to get done, and know that it's you and you know what you're doing, and they can't take that away from you.
That's pretty good. You know what? Those are highlights. We're going to end on that note. So, Alana, thank you for being our leading lady. You were awesome today. And I know, you know, this was a stretch. No, you were wonderful. And I hope, listeners, I hope you enjoyed some of the slices of advice that Alana gave us. Because as you know, we are here every Friday afternoon at 2 and Monday mornings at 9 a.m. for Women Lead Radio. And I'm delighted to say that our Monday morning show, we are going to be interviewing Leticia Garcia, who's the founder of Let's Zest Now, and you are in for a delight because our host of Women Lead Radio on Monday is going to be the lovely Erica De La Cruz. So we will see you back on Monday, and please have a great weekend. And one thing I always say is, you know, one of the things we can do as women to move the needle forward is please support each other and help the next one in line. And on that, have a great weekend.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.